Welcome to the milk bar. 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 Welcome to the milk bar.
Welcome along to episode 485 of the Milk Bar. Jason Forrest here with you as ever. And coming up on the show this week, we'll have music from Steve Young. We'll be talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month and also finding out how you can reduce the risk by having alcohol-free days. That's on the way. Also, finding out all about Macbeth, Lord and Lady Macbeth joining us. Lord Macbeth is on his way in a moment to his time. And we'll be finding out about the latest goings on with the film The Long Way Home, as they have a tote bag and T-shirt available with Josh Griffiths' face on it. We'll be talking to Josh all about being immortalised in an oil painting and then placed onto T-shirts very soon. But first of all, as I mentioned, Macbeth is on its way to the Grand in the spring of next year. So I went along to the South Bank in London to the National Gallery rehearsal rooms, where I caught up with two of the cast, the first of which is the Lord of the Manor. With Macbeth at the Grand Theatre, from the 12th to the 16th of March 2019. It's going to be an interesting time for the lead character. I think it works out okay. We'll find out what happens, or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. We'll have to see. Michael Nardone, hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
And Macbeth, a great role, great play, and obviously some challenges along the way for your character, which is always good.
Well, a few physical challenges as well as a few emotional challenges, you know. But like you say, great role, great play. What's why would you not want to do it?
Absolutely not. And as part of a cast which is setting itself in a time a little forward of now, a future that's not as we know it, and without all of those things that we enjoy, like the internet. And a way of exploring a world through the eyes of Shakespeare, which is relevant to now.
Well, exactly. You know, it's relevant to now because we see in the world around us the greed, the corruption, you know, the lust for power. And not only that, we see division being sown in countries that we never really saw before. Mm-hmm. So the idea that a civil unrest in this country, not talking about Europe, is very, very possible. Mm-hmm. And not that far away.
No, I mean, in our lifetimes, we've seen things like the poll tax riots and that sort of thing. And that can really bring home to you what can happen in the country you live in, which seems fairly standard and stable.
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, we were talking about this before, you know, in the 1970s, you know, you're not long after the Second World War, you were victorious in this country, you know, and everything was great. You know, you're in the 20th century. But in the 70s, when I was a kid, 6 or 7, I remember the 3-day week. Mm-hmm. I remember the power cuts. You know, we remember the fuel shortages.
We had to bake bread. There was never any bread, right, was there?
No. So we've kind of, you know, we've in our lifetimes, we've had a flavour of what it's like to, you know, to just touch on what would happen if, for example, the national grid went down. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the 70s, there was no Wi-Fi. No. So there was no internet, of course. So it was a very different kind. However, and the population was lower. Nonetheless, we had a little brush with it. And we see it all over. We saw it in the Balkans in 1998. We saw this. We saw the fragmentation of an entire country. Mm-hmm. And we saw horrific acts being perpetrated by neighbour against neighbour. You know, so it's never that far away.
And this setting of the Shakespearean story, which is itself set 1,000 years prior to now, and the way in which people react and interact, it shows that some things stay the same and other things, you know, maybe haven't changed as much as we'd like to think.
Well, no, you know, the population-wise, it was very different. Mm-hmm. However, it was still a struggle to survive. It's mm-hmm. a fight to survive. It's a wasteland, you know, and it's a real. People are trying to assert themselves, you know, and they're trying to. The real. Now we're talking about 1050. This is the period when the real Macbeth, not the fictional guy, mm-hmm. the real king was the King of Scotland, and you know, and his entire obsession was to bring a real equilibrium. He wanted peace. He was a very pious man. So that's, however, you're still fighting against the factions, the nobles, the different militias who want to grab the power for themselves, you know, so it's a bit kind of lawless. So, but I don't want to compare the real guy with this guy, because, you know,
very much of Shakespeare's mind and a way of telling a story in a time when, you know, this was people's entire access to arts through Shakespeare's theatre, that the people would go and you know, the same way as someone would buy a subscription to something now, you know, friends of a theatre. That's how Shakespeare made his money, I suppose, wasn't it? People going back to see play after play.
Well, you know, you're going down the globe. You couldn't just provide a 3 or 4 hour play. It had to be a daily event.
Yeah.
So these plays that Shakespeare were writing were long plays. And they were long because people wanted their money's worth, you know. Yeah. So you're going down there, you might be watching the first act at 10 o'clock in the morning. Then there's going to be drinks, there's going to be a ballet, there's going to be music, and it's going to be like that all through the day. And the play will end up in its culmination. So people felt that they had a real day out.
Yeah.
At the theatre, you know, and they were being completely surprised, entertained, you know, they were having those emotions kind of ripped apart purely because of this guy who was supply and demand. He was supplying to his audience like anybody else, but it just so happens he was pretty good at it.
Yeah. And to have his work being performed so many years on, and it is just so many different ways of providing a way of telling these stories, and say this is what the National Theatre is doing here. It is taking this out on the road across the country and sharing acting talent from around the country, across our great set of nations, and providing it to people in their localities. And this is, again, another big part of what the National's doing. It must be great to be part of that.
It's extremely important. It should be their entire raison d'etre. They have this fantastic building in the South Bank of London, you know, which they fill, but you know. The country is so much bigger than that, you know, and everybody deserves to be able to have access to the best theatre, you know, and so the National Theatre absolutely have to go on the road. It's also their duty to our young people of this country, you know. I think it's we don't talk about them enough, you know. Our duty to them is extremely important, you know, that they have access to this, that they see it. If they're studying it and they're given a chance to get a better insight to the play by being challenged, and then it provokes a debate within the classroom and all that stuff. And it's all, for me, that's the biggest thing about going on tour at this level, is for the children, for the girls.
And you know, inspiring them to look further into the arts and see where they go next. Because even Absolutely. If they go into Amdram because of it, which gives them an outlet, gives them confidence, it's a big part of their lives.
Of course, it's completely. You know, everybody needs to find a way to, you know, express themselves. You know, and if you even if they were encouraged to go and read history, university, or even just to be a regular theatre goer, and be a you know, and just go and attend the theatre and to be entertained, then that's, you know, if you have to leave them wanting more, you know.
Well, certainly I think this will whet their appetites for all that is available through the work of the National Theatre, and of course visiting somewhere like the Grand on a regular basis for a number of different options. Yeah. And it's great to know that this sort of touring thing is going to be well supported, and particularly with schools, and making the most of a brilliant facility that is being pushed out there across the nation. So have a brilliant time with the tour. I'm sure you will break a leg.
As
we should say. And
thank you. And I'm looking forward to coming to Wolverhampton, because I've never been.
Have you not done this? Because I mean, as an actor, you get to see a great lot of regional theatre.
I've never been to Wolverhampton, even as a person.
Right. Okay.
So it's a brand new.
It's a great city. Let me know when you get there. I'll be quite happy taking Macbeth out for a beer. That would be quite cool. So we shall see what we can do with that. We'll hold him to
that. You heard it right there.
Okay. Great to meet you, great to talk, and Michael, thank you for sharing your bit of Macbeth with us. Grandtheatre.co.uk to get your tickets, 01902 429212, the box office number. Get along between the 12th and the 16th of March 2019. In a moment or two's time, we'll hear from Steve Young, but first, let's take a track from his brand new album.
Shoulders getting heavy, sun is dipping low. And I know my place. 1, 2, 3, let's go. She's sitting looking nervous. Must be her first day. And her face is close on beautiful as she waits. It's another day of the Great North Road. Candlelight's lonely soul. too young to stop trying, but I'm too old to care. And I don't know where I'm going, but my friends tell me I'm there. And the barman shouts 900, God knows what that means. Another table pays the bill, not in thanks to me as they leave. It's another day up the Green North Road, flicker of a candlelight's lonely soul. Another day up the Green North Road, love will come and find you, just don't let go. Another day up the Green North Road, I'll sing my songs to you and those you love. Bet you've seen the world. You've been married 50 years, but she's still your girl. I haven't spoken to a soul all night, but I sang a million words. And I hope I got it right, I hope I earned my worth. Another day up the Green North Road, flicker of a candlelight's lonely soul. Another day up the Green North Road, love will come and find you, just don't let go. Another day up the Green North Road, I'm counting down the miles trying to keep it slow. Another day up the Green North Road, I'll sing my song.
Steve Young plays the Glee Club in Birmingham on the 22nd of October, and there is the brand new album out there now. To tell us more about what's going on, he's on the line now.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. So, obviously the excitement of the gig in Birmingham, but this is all running alongside the fact you've got a crowd-funded album with fans from Tokyo through the USA and across the UK all supporting you. And it's your second album, A Little North of Nowhere. Tell us a bit about that to start off with.
I used to be a session player, so I've done a lot of touring around the world and stuff, and so I guess I managed to pick up a few followers in the remotest of places or the unusual places. So when I sort of started doing my pledge campaigns for my own stuff, they were there and willing to help, which is absolutely amazing, because without them, it wouldn't have been possible. So yeah, Little North of Nowhere, it's my second album, my best one yet.
But I mean, with the music itself, though, I mean, it's Americana, it's rock, blues. I mean, has this come from the session work that you did, or was this an interest before you started performing with other people?
No, all my session work was pop, like full-on pop. So yeah, there was no connection there whatsoever. When I first started playing guitar, I was really obsessed with kind of blues players. And it's a great style of music to actually learn to play the guitar to as well, because if you learn to play the guitar and you're into kind of rock and blues, then in my opinion, you learn to play it properly. So yeah, it's always been there. I mean, my dad and his brothers were always big country music fans, so it was always from as far back as I can remember, you know, being sort of 4 or 5 years old and sitting in his car, it was always Johnny Cash and Glen Campbell and constantly, you know. So my mum was a huge Johnny Cash fan as well, although she also loved Queen and still does. So yeah, that kind of music was always there. And then when I kind of became professional, I was sort of following the work rather than following the genre. So you're more kind of regular bands. I mean, they have people that are already in the band. So it tends to be more the pop artists that are hiring
So working with the likes of Lionel Richie, Darren Hayes, you've had a great time doing all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
That must be an experience itself, going out on the road with these people.
Yeah, Lionel Richie was my kind of first proper session job back in 2002. And it was only a week, and it was just a bunch of TV shows. He was over promoting a new live album. And so it was just like a week's worth of TV shows. But it was my first kind of, you know, I was working a regular job at that time. I was working in London, just doing a normal job. And it was just such a... I can't explain it, how it completely changed my life, basically, you know, because I realised that, you know, that I wanted to stay in professional music. I didn't want to go back to having a regular job. And then, so I kind of pursued that career, and there was a few little one-off things that I did in the summer, like radio road shows, just doing that kind of stuff. And then the Darren Hayes thing came along, and I was actually his guitarist for 5 years. He was very encouraging. He really encouraged me on the writing side of things as well. And I actually ended up co-writing on his last album, playing guitar on it as well. So I can't even begin to describe how much of a learning curve it was. I mean, we were playing venues like the Royal Albert Hall and Wembley Arena, and I mean, you can't get the lessons you need to play places like that unless you actually do it. And so, not that I'm playing anything like that now.
But, this time will come. You know. Come on, we expect to see that again soon. And obviously, alongside the Real Time Players, we had a sold-out album launch in Camden back on the 12th of September.
Yeah.
So with this national tour and the album that's going to do phenomenal things for you, I think it's going to be good fun.
I know
a digital release. The album's also available as a deluxe double CD. You've got bonus tracks. Yeah. You've got a song-by-song audio commentary. And as well as all of that, some brilliant upcoming country artists working alongside you.
I have, yeah. I've got the fabulous Laura Oakes, who did all the backing vocals, Paul Thornhill, Matt Park, who's one of the, you know, UK's top pedal steel players, Daniel Shear on the violin. I mean, he plays with everybody. I mean, I was really lucky to get such great players on board. And, you know, I think that really helps. It really makes the album something special. I mean, obviously I did all the guitar and the vocals and stuff, but having those guys on board as well just really took it to the next level, you know. I'm very, very happy with it.
Well, I mean, what is your favourite track on the album?
I think at the moment it's The Fool's Dream. I love playing it live. Love the way the album just starts with it. Whiskey and Wine's a lot of fun to play live. You know, it's blues, and it kind of takes you right back to my roots. My Son, which is the last song, has quite a big impact on the live audiences. And although I find it sometimes a bit tough to sing live just because of the subject, it really does hit home with the audience. And it's definitely a strong song for the live set, you know. So it's hard to pick a favourite, you know.
Well, what we'll do, we'll play a full stream in a moment or two's time. But before we do, give us all your web and social stuff so people can check out more before they come along and see the gig.
Okay, yeah, all my social media is at SteveYoungUK. And my website is steveyounguk.com. Yeah, you'll find me on Spotify and all the usual things.
Well, I'm sure there are links to the ticket sales via the website. Glee Club in Birmingham on the 22nd of October is when we can see you in our area. But it sounds like it's going to be absolutely fantastic. Let's take a listen. This is Steve Young performing A Fool's Dream. Thank you for joining us.
Cool. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Get this far, no.
working in a fever. I've been working in a fever, baby. It gets so hot that I can't breathe. Ain't nothing gonna stop me. Ain't nothing gonna stop me, baby, for doing the things that I need. Seen the dollar signs in your eyes, but you were gone long. This far, I wake up in a different room. I start working on a brand new tune. Can't help who we are. I bet you didn't think you'd get this far. No, no.
It should be a fantastic gig in Birmingham. Make sure you get yourself along there, and we'll have more from Steve musically in a short while's time. We are in Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and as part of their Drink Free Days campaign, Drink Aware and Public Health England are encouraging women of all ages to reduce their risk of developing cancer. To have a little chat about this, I've got Dr. Sarah Jarvis and Kate Garraway. Hello to you both.
Hello. How are you?
All good here. And how do we make sure that everybody else is keeping healthy and well too?
Well, the first thing is we let them know what the facts are. So we know that breast cancer affects about 1 in 8 women in the UK in their lifetime. That's over 55,000 women every year. But what we also know is about 1 in 13 of those cases is caused by alcohol. So what alcohol does is it increases the level of the female hormone estrogen in your bloodstream. And over time, that raised level of estrogen can contribute to breast cancer.
And I think once you know the facts, it can be a little bit overwhelming. I think most people know someone, either a relative or a friend or a friend of a friend who's had breast cancer now. And it feels like it's everywhere. And one of the things I love about this is that it's something that you can do that reduces your risk of getting breast cancer and also gives you a healthier, fresher life as well. So it's, we're not saying cut alcohol out altogether.
Although that's fine if you do want to.
Although Sarah would say, why not? Why not if you can? But at the very least, what's a good thing to do is to have several drink-free days a week. And I gave up alcohol altogether, Sarah, you mocking person.
Very good.
I know you don't believe I can, in January. And certainly what it flagged up to me is that actually a lot of the drinks we have are kind of automatic or habitual, not because we're addicted, but habitual because we get in from work, we open the fridge, we pour a glass of wine almost without thinking. And by cutting it out, it's meant that I can very happily now and more easily have created some new habits. So I do avoid drinking on, you know, several days a week and feel much better for it.
Yeah, because when it comes down to alcohol, often it is best used to as part of a social event. When it does become habit forming, even if it's not at a dangerous level as far as the overall volume is concerned, you're not really enjoying it in the way in which you would hope to be doing so with a product which in itself can be dangerous.
I think it's really interesting that Kate made the point that she worked out that a lot of the time she wasn't necessarily enjoying it. It wasn't because she wanted it. It was because she had got into a habit. But interestingly, I mean, the chief medical officer's low-risk guidelines say that it's safer for men and women to drink not more than 14 units a week. So actually, you don't need to be drinking that much in order for the risks to start building up. And what we know is that of the people who were surveyed, and we asked a lot of people, how would you find it easiest to cut down your drinking to make sure that you stay within those chief medical officers' low-risk guidelines? And a lot of them said, actually, it's much easier not to drink at all on several days a week rather than to cut down the amount that we're drinking during the rest of the time. Now, clearly, what we're not suggesting is have several drink-free days and then increase your drinking on the rest of the
week. No binging on Thursdays.
Nobody said that. But it's actually a really easy way to do it because most people have got a few days in the week when they're going out to the cinema, they're not going out to drink to the pub. You know, they're having friends around so they can make coffee or make a really nice non-alcoholic cocktail. There's loads of really swish virgin cocktails you can make these days. You can still make it feel like you're having a treat. And you can get out of that habit. And that's really important. It's getting out of the habit of associating everything you do with alcohol.
And I think as well, weirdly, even though Sarah says you can't drink more if you haven't drunk, she's right. But sometimes it feels like you have because you have had several drink-free days.
So you're saying you're getting better value from the drink that you do have?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. So actually, you will feel the effect of a smaller amount of alcohol. Absolutely.
Yeah, so do be sensible in everything that you drink when it comes down to alcohol. Consider the alcohol-free days and look at it as part of the overall health picture. And when it comes down to something like breast cancer, during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, obviously there are a number of factors that come into it, but this is an important one that can be avoided. We know there are genetics in there, and even though it could be genetics linking in with the amount of estrogen produced based on alcohol, and it could be different in different people from different backgrounds, but it is one of those key factors that's flagging up that is well worth looking at and taking very seriously. So how could people find out more about the whole of these drink-free days and the great work this campaign is doing?
Very simple. You can log on to www.drinkfreedays.co.uk. They've got an alcohol calculator in there, which is really important because in my surgery, I am stunned at how much people underestimate the amount they drink and how many people think that one glass of wine is one unit of alcohol. It's not. A standard wine bar glass of wine is 2.2 units. A large glass of wine bar wine is 3 units. Same thing with beer. Strong lagers, you might have 4 units, not 2 units in a pint. So first thing you do is work out how much you are drinking, then compare yourself with other people, and then there are loads of practical tips on www.drinkfreedays.co.uk tell you how you can get yourself several days drink-free days every week and feel a whole lot better.
And that's going to be good for the boys as well as the girls.
Yeah, totally, absolutely, because one of the things I noticed was my skin was better. Everything feels a bit fresher.
Sleeping better.
I never have trouble sleeping better. I get up early in the morning. I'm out like a light.
You're
I'm lucky if I get to the end
person.
Of... I think I'm probably the only person that fell asleep during the bodyguard. and then forced my husband to stay silent all the next day until I caught up. But you do feel better the next day, definitely, if you've had a drink-free day the day before.
Make sure you do. Make the most of it. Enjoy your drink-free days, but also know you're ticking a great box on helping with your health and particularly looking at the estrogen levels caused by alcohol in women, which will reduce the risk of breast cancer. Thank you both for joining us. Enjoy your drink-free days, almost as much as you enjoy the ones where you do have a little tipple. But for now, I've got to say thank you very much, Dr. Sarah Jarvis and Kate Garraway.
Love
you, Jason.
Much noise in my ears, too many colors that weren't red. Now I'm thinking too much and I'm full of regret. A promise is broken, a chains that I've wrecked. I'm drowning my heartache. Oh.
once again. There's no wine in heaven, no whiskey in hell, so I might as well drink till they throw in the towel. And I'm trying my best, Lord, but life is so hard. I only see sunshine at the bottom of my glass. Something to say, well, you know I'll be there. The white hot queen's hair, the king cares. Now I'm playing hide and seek with my integrity. I look in the mirror, I hate what I see. Drowning my heartache one more time. Trying my best, Lord, but life is so hard. I only see sunshine at the bottom of my glass. Oh, I only see sunshine at the bottom of my glass.
The 16th of March, Macbeth is at Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre. Lady Macbeth is played by Kirsty Besserman, who's with me now. Hello.
Hello.
And we're in a Macbeth, which is set in a slightly future forward.
Yes, yeah, a futuristic sort of Macbeth where we're in a civil war situation. We're imagining that the national grid has gone down, the rubbish isn't being collected, there's no internet, and the world has descended into a more primitive, savage place.
And this world, though, it has changed because, you say, we're in a civil war. Yes. Obviously, this is the original setting for Macbeth. There is all of the...
Civil wars, the Norwegians at the beginning. And then, yes. Yeah.
So all of that is part of the Shakespeare story, but the setting itself makes it somewhat different because your character obviously follows the original Lady Macbeth in the way in which she is treated by society, but hopefully society now wouldn't be like that. It's like a destruction of some of the rules and regulations we started to believe in properly and fully and put into place that have fallen away in her time.
Yes, so she is still sort of keeping the home fires burning while her husband is at war. Mm-hmm. But I imagine that she is running the estate still, even if they still own land, they still might have animals and crops. I mean, I would assume if the national grid went down, I would need to plant some vegetables.
Absolutely.
In my garden, right? So
the allotment to somebody becomes very important.
I'd be quite busy, you know, purifying water from my water butt. and storing it, maybe. I mean, I'm just making this up.
This is you setting the scene for yourself, I suppose,
myself,
a little bit. Yeah.
So she is still running the show while he is at war. And then, of course, their sort of, what's the word, ascent into power by the means that they decide to go.
Well, very
by.
Much by force, yeah. And in, say, it's set in the future from now, maybe around 5-10 years, something like that, but in a society which has sort of changed and developed because of this war, people have changed because of the situation so they found themselves in.
Yeah, we all carry a knife. Mm-hmm. There is potentially a moment where I have, you know, I use my knife as a sort of means of self-protection. We are wearing, I'm wearing trousers and these Doc Martens mm-hmm. in the show, and that's really refreshing, actually, to be playing a character, you know, lady who then becomes a queen, but she's still a very earthy, she's robust and active.
And very much a Shakespearean character, because we're looking back to a play that was written 400 years ago, set 1,000 years ago originally, and it is that crossover. I think that's probably part of the direction, isn't it? Is making sure you're getting parts of modern day combined with the feelings of 1,000 years ago that would have resurfaced during the current setting.
Yes, yes.
Is that how you see it? I mean, do you feel there is a lot of Shakespeare in there?
Yeah, I do.
Because sometimes he disappears from the story. It's his story, but some people, they take it away. But the national hero, and with the direction from Rufus,
the story is key, and the concept is fitting around Shakespeare's play, I would say.
A production, though, which is going to really touch all parts of the country as it goes on tour. And this is part of the National's work, isn't it? It's taking this out there and showing people what we as a nation are when it comes to our art.
Yes, it's brilliant. Yeah. The reason I got into theatre was because I used to go as a school kid. Mm-hmm. I was taken to the theatre a lot. And we will be able to access so many schools, so many young people. There's a great ticket deal, I believe, for under a certain age. I don't know the details, I should know that. And that is amazing to be able to do that and be part of that.
And to be inspiring the next generation as well.
Yeah.
And with the work that you do as part of a show like this at the National, how do you see the cast and everybody that's come together to produce this? Because you're quite a diverse group from different cities across the nation.
Yeah, we are a really diverse bunch. Not that many Londoners, actually. There's a lot of people that are having to find places to stay in London because, you know, there are people coming from all over the place. And we're visiting lots of people's hometowns. So
that's quite nice as well. Yeah. I mean, this is the joys of touring, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you're actually sitting on a plane in London and you're working on that the whole time, you don't get to go and visit places. And I think that's again, part of the ethos of the whole Shakespearean thing, was that he set plays in all sorts of places. He was based in the Midlands, so, you know, he got about a bit.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, his geography in Scotland is not very good. when you unpick this play and go, well, hang on a minute, that town and that, he's not there next day, like, you know.
There were some really quick horses in the original, but
motorbikes.
Yeah, but in this one, motorbikes could be
motorbikes. Yeah. I mean, we don't say when he says I rode, whatever. Well, it's obviously a horse. I think they say to horse.
Yeah, they've probably run out of fuel by this point, haven't they?
Yeah, there'd be no fuel, so it would be horses.
but again, a nice setting, a great story, one that's on the syllabus. And what else is there for you in this? Because it's got so many tick boxes already. But
well, for me, I have never been in a play. I've been in a lot of plays. Mm-hmm. I've been in a lot of Shakespeare plays. I'm never the one that gets to get covered in blood.
Yeah.
And do stuff with daggers and things. And I am going to get covered in, you know, I get to do all the gritty stuff, which is really exciting.
So you're enjoying the whole Lady Macbeth thing. You're not going to turn this into the way you live your life in the film. Maybe just for the forcefulness.
No.
You could be forceful, couldn't you?
I mean, yes, assertive,
but
proactive.
But you're not going to carry the knife.
I won't carry the knife.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be amazing. I've seen part of the rehearsal today, and it looks phenomenal. The scale of the set, and that's going to be interesting when it comes to all the different theatres, the way what that's made to work. But it is very much the scale of the production which is making this even better.
Yeah, it is. It's an epic production. We've got a huge set, a huge bridge that we're going to be moving around the country. So yeah, we've got a lot to live up to, really.
Well, I think it's going to be amazing. To be fair, I think it's going to be good. So come and see Macbeth, yeah, Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre, March 2019. 01902 429212 is the box office number. Grandtheatre.co.uk to get your hands on tickets and check out those ticket deals, which will be there for the youngsters.
Yeah, there will be really good ticket deals for the youngsters. Yeah.
So look out for that one and get them involved. And if you're part of a school or college that is looking at Macbeth as part of your coursework, now is the time to get yourself booked up and get along and see it.
Yeah.
And this will be educational and a great take on it and a way of delivering the story.
It'll be gory, it'll be violent.
Yeah.
Well, it might appeal to people. I personally don't.
I don't
really like the gory
stuff.
You
were the one who wanted to get your hands covered in blood in the play.
No, but that's because I'm doing it. If I was watching it, I would be like that. but when you're in it, it's, you know.
That makes all the difference.
I think that will appeal to certain members of the public.
Well,
it?
Yeah, I think so. A good bit of fake gore is good fun. So, Grand Theatre, 12th to the 16th of March, 2019. Very much look forward to seeing you then.
I see blue seas crashing on yellow sand. I see your eyes high behind trembling hands. Everybody works hard, hoping for a better life. Everybody works hard, just to try and get it right. I see hard times in this beautiful place. I see cracks in the walls, I see empty streets. Come and go with a smile on their face. They don't see the hard times in this beautiful place. And you were my first love, probably be my last. When the sunlight shimmers on wet grass, knowing that you meant well, not to take away the pain. Knowing that you meant well, blows away the summer rain. I see hard times in this beautiful place. I see cracks in the walls on the tired parade. Love a new heart, hold a new embrace. There'll be no more hard times in this beautiful place. No more cracks in the walls, on the streets from where I came. People still come and go with a smile on their face. They'll never see the hard times. Never see the hard times in this beautiful place. In this beautiful place. In this beautiful place.
The Long Way Home has been in production for some time now, and it's time to get the merchandise sorted. Somebody who appears on that merch is Josh Griffiths, who joins me on the line now. Good afternoon, sir. How you doing, mate?
Good afternoon. I'm good, thank you.
Good. So, what's it like being immortalised in an oil painting on a T-shirt? This is a little bit unusual, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's crazy.
Tell us a bit about the film for us, sir, for those who don't know to begin with.
So, the film is almost a recollection of a true story about the Shropshire Powells going off to war in the Battle of the Somme.
This is something that's been brought together over what? It must be nearly 2 years this has been in production.
Well, it's been in production for four.
Four, really?
It only got brought on board 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And obviously, as one of the actors in this, working with the whole team, you've been quite involved in everything that's been going on. And then finally, your face has been chosen as one of the images in effectively a still from the movie itself.
Tazzy, and it's unreal, but exciting.
So give us the rest of the background as the way that the film came out. Tell us about the director.
Director's Jake Lewis-Taylor. It's for his first big film. He's gone to film school in London, so he's already got experience, but then he's taken this on board and directed it, and I think it's amazing.
And the writing team as well?
Yep, he wrote it. He started the idea with his friend Jack Coleman, and he's been on board with it, but Jake Lewis-Taylor decided to write the full film and directed it, along with the production company, and brought us on board for characters, and the rest is history, really.
Absolutely, and it is covering history quite closely as well, and that's been an important part to everybody in the film. So tell us a bit about the actual image that's been used of you on this T-shirt.
The image of me used on the T-shirt is actually an oil painting from an artist called Andy Sylvester. He was an amazing painter, and it was quite unreal, really. He was entering a competition for the Wilfrid 100 festival that was going on, an art competition, and Marguerite, one of the producers of the film, sent him this image of me, looking quite shell-shocked with blood all over my face, and he said, "I love it, I want to paint it," and then here it is.
And there you go.
On a bag and a T-shirt.
A bag and a T-shirt. So I take it the whole family are getting these for Christmas to start off with.
Oh, definitely. What the present is.
Absolutely. So where can people go along and find out more about this film in advance of its... Because its final release isn't out yet, is it?
Well, you can find the Facebook page, which is under just The Long Way Home, or the Twitter page, which is at TLWH.
And all the merchandise is available through that.
And well, all the merchandise you can find the website for, but the actual website is... TLWH.tmil.com.
So get everything there and get a T-shirt with Josh on it, and say a great souvenir of a locally produced film about a fantastic story set in Shropshire, and being true to the history of a time back in World War One. Josh, always good to talk to you. We do have to have a chat again soon. You can give us a brief synopsis of what's coming up, because you have a film coming out on Halloween, don't you?
I do, yes.
Tell us more.
It's called Escape. It has also been in production for 2 years now, so it's quite a long one. Basically, it's taken 2 years to create, getting people on board and having to think of continuity and the rest of it. And the basic rough storyline is these two businessmen have been thrown into a house by this mysterious figure, and it's all about them having to work together, which they don't like, to solve clues and try and escape.
Well, what we do is we will get you and some of the cast in to have a little bit of a natter about that one, probably the week before Halloween itself, as we do talk more about that. But for now, Josh Griffiths, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That's a lot for this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be back with episode 486 next week. I'll see you then. Ta-ra for now.
Goodbye from the milk bar. Goodbye from the milk bar. Goodbye from the milk bar. Goodbye from the milk bar, yeah. Goodbye from the milk bar, yeah.